You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
It's your host, Helen Holliman of You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network, back for another beautiful week of Heritage Radio in Roberta's restaurant, Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today, I've got a unique guest on. Unfortunately, has to be by phone due to New York City traffic, but I'm joined today by Jeff Northrup, owner of New York Oyster Company. And Jeff, are you on the line?
I am. How are you?
Hey, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Are you still driving? Or are you gonna crash?
I'm not driving. No, I'm gonna try to get arrested. Driving with the telephone in my ear. I'm just sitting shadily on the side of the road, sort of slumped down in my car. But I think everything should be fine.
It's so gangster. Well, thanks again for coming on today. To give you guys a little bit of background on Jeff. Jeff used to, you're 26, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So Jeff is a young, dapper 26-year-old dude who was working in hedge fund trading and kind of decided to leave that and start this family business of oyster farming, which the oyster beds have been in your family's possession for over 100 and, what, 50 years?
Yes, 1857. They've been from a king's grant, I guess. That's how my family owns them, so.
So that's a pretty wild jump from trading money to oysters. That's pretty amazing. What type of oysters are you guys growing on this family plot, and where are you exactly growing it?
So the farm is located in an 83-acre tile sill pond in Westport, Connecticut, called the Sherwood Island Mill Pond. The oyster itself is called the Hummock Island Pearl, and it's your Virginica species oyster, which is basically the type of oyster that every single East Coast oyster is. And so it's not exactly a blue point, but it's a more refined East Coast salt pond oyster that we cultivate in this little pond that we have.
And you're repping over like a ton of different types of oysters, right? I mean, what kinds of other varieties are you growing there?
Well, right now in that pond, we're growing what we call the Hummock Island Pearl, which is a cocktail size premium East Coast oyster. And then we're also growing on our oyster beds just outside the pond in front of Campo Beach, Westport, Connecticut. We're growing the Copps Island variety of oysters, and also another which we call the Cedar Point. The Cedar Point brand. And those are, the same species, but a little bit larger, a little bit more meaty. A lot of the steakhouses and places like that prefer those type of oysters, due to the size. But the more chic, trendy restaurants definitely want the pearls, because they're small and they know exactly how many will fit on a plate, and aesthetically they're just gorgeous.
You represent, your oysters are available in some of the top tier restaurants in New York City, including DBGB, Danielle, Balthazar. You're also Mario Batali's oyster rep. How tell people your story of how you got those oysters on the menu.
Well, you know, restaurants were through connections of mine that, you know, I had had previously with several restaurant owners, for example, you know, for Lava Tao and 57 and the Tao Group restaurants, you know, which includes the Dream Hotel and all that. You know, I had a contact. I actually knew the owner, Noah Berber, of the Strategic Group, and he, you know, introduced me to his head chef, Ralph Scamardelli, and, you know, basically they loved the oysters, and, you know, that's how we got that account. And from there it really took off, but, you know, I think more than half of the accounts that I've gotten, you know, have just been walking in the front door. You know, I consider myself a person. I'm pulling the wool over somebody's eyes, if they only knew, right? Not, I'm just kidding. You know, so I'll just walk into the restaurant, you know, with a box of fresh oysters. And as I told you the other day, you know, I'll just walk right into the kitchen, you know, sort of as if I'm already their oyster purveyor. And, you know, this sort of prevents people from, you know, putting up a roadblock, you know, when you're walking into the restaurant, you know, looking like somebody trying to sell something, you know, it prevents that kind of thing. And I just walk right into the kitchen and try to speak to the chef. And, you know, this is definitely dangerous. I wouldn't recommend it, but I've had, you know, a fair amount of success doing this kind of thing. You know, an example that I love to talk about is with Mark Forgione and his restaurant down in Tribeca. It was, I think it was mid-September, around 9:30 p.m. on a Friday night. The restaurant was packed, and we had a burlwood box of oysters on ice, ready to go, and I just sort of walked right in the front door. And as you may know, the kitchen in Mark Forgione's restaurant is relatively open, so I just sort of walked to the back, and I knew what he looked like, and I just, you know, walked right up to him and, you know, gave him the pitch, and he was just astonished, and, you know, he loved the presentation. And, you know, we've been supplying his oysters ever since, and they're in, he has a special recipe for barbecued Hummock Island oysters, and, you know, if you Google it, it's all over the place. So, yeah, that's been my approach.
That's pretty ballsy. Have you ever been punched in the face for doing that?
It's been close. I've had a few close calls. You know, I've had chefs say, you know, come back later. I've also had chefs say, don't ever come here again. So, you know, this only happened a couple times, but, you know, for the most part, you know, the product sells itself. So if they can, you know, if they can see the product, you know, they're immediately interested because it's a beautiful looking oyster. And if they taste the product, it's a done deal. I mean, really, the freshness, you know, we deliver everything within 8 hours of it being harvested. So the oyster is never sitting overnight in a warehouse or just, you know, collecting dust, as they say. You know, it's always directly from our boats right to the kitchen. So, you know, the freshness, I mean, it literally tastes like the sea.
We'll just take a quick break, and don't go away. There's much more in store. You're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. Stay tuned.
An alligator blinded by the surf.
You are listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman. If you're just tuning in, I'm joined today by Jeff Northrup of New York Oyster Company. During the break, we listened to Do Not Feed the Oysters by Stephen Malkmus, which is apropos for today's show. Jeff and I have been talking about his highly successful oyster business. It's a family-run business. And Jeff, thanks again for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So before the break, we were talking a little bit about suit and tie jobs and, you know, sort of discussing how, you know, many people over the past 5 years have left suit and tie jobs to pursue careers in the food and beverage industry, whether it's because they lost their job or they've always dreamed of a, you know, goal to create a sort of creative job industry for themselves. I want to know, what's your motivation for swapping the business world for the seafood world, and how did you get into this?
Well, I see myself, you know, sort of following in the footsteps of Luke Holden from Luke's Lobster, in the sense that, you know, it wasn't necessarily that he was, you know, totally fed up with business and just wanted to leave the, you know, busy world of New York and business altogether. It was more, you know, that he saw an opportunity to do something that he loved and, you know, the chance to be successful in something like that, you know, that really made him, you know, start what, you know, everybody knows today as Luke's Lobster. So, I was at a hedge fund, Excess Capital, it's a very successful long-short equity fund by Adam Sender, one of the former SAC Capital futures traders. And, you know, I was working 21-hour days and, you know, making good money. But, you know, these oyster beds have been in my family since 1857, and my father had been, you know, selling them to restaurants in Connecticut, and he was a very good friend of Paul Newman, and, you know, they were out fishing one day, and Paul Newman said, you know, Jeff, I'm opening a restaurant, my father's name is Jeff also, you know, and I'd like you to supply the oysters. And my dad said, well, you know, we really only sell to, like, a couple of distributors, we don't really sell direct to restaurants. And Paul Newman was like, well, you're going to sell now to direct the restaurants. So that's sort of where it all got started. And, you know, I saw my dad was having some success, and I just really thought that I could brand the product and the company in a successful way, you know, due to, you know, I guess my social skills and whatnot. And, you know, I just saw the opportunity to create something really great. But, you know, also, you know, that made money, that was, you know, something that I could make a living off of. And, you know, that's where it's gone. And, you know, once I was, you know, entering into different New York restaurants, proposing, you know, them to buy our oysters, a lot of them were like, well, you know, we'll buy your oysters if we can buy all of our oysters from you. And that led to a whole other chain of events where, you know, we were talking to other oyster farms on the West Coast, going to the Fulton Fish Market, talking to other growers and sourcing West Coast oysters, sourcing oysters from Maine, sourcing oysters from Martha's Vineyard, etc. But, you know, leaving Wall Street, I can't say it's been a walk in the park. I mean, I still work the same amount of hours. I still am equally exhausted at the end of the day. It's just a little bit more satisfying and tangible of a result at the end of the day, you know, because we're actually, you know, putting smiles on people's faces and selling a product that's real instead of, you know, some sort of derivatives or financial instruments that are a little bit more theoretical.
There's been recent science reports that oysters are, quote-unquote, functionally extinct, which means they're rapidly disappearing from the oceans. Like, 85% of wild oyster reefs have been destroyed by either, like, disease or over-harvesting, but 75% of remaining wild oysters are found in North America. And now more than ever, companies like yours are really important to maintaining the wealth and health, if you will, of oysters. And can you explain to people some of the steps that you're taking to, I guess, maintain, like, a sustainable oyster farm approach?
Right. When my father was interviewed a week ago on thefeast.com as being Mario Batali's exclusive oyster purveyor, he mentioned the fact that all the oyster farmers sort of chuckle at this sustainable seafood idea and the whole concept of sustainability, because that's something that we've been doing since the very beginning. And the reason being is that oysters, just by their very nature, are sustainable creatures. As they live, they clean the seawater, they take, you know, nitrogen out of the water and, you know, create, you know, much cleaner water. They can filter polluted bays and intertidal waterways, and they often, you know, if they're not swept out by a disease, can repopulate certain areas. So one thing that my family has done over the past 50 years is several oyster restoration projects in which we have donated or lent large amounts of oysters. So we're talking, you know, in the 50 to 100,000 oyster quantity to different areas in the United States that are losing their oyster population or that have been hit by diseases like MSX or Vibrio. These are the two main ones that attack shellfish. And, you know, actually, in the past 100 years, even in the Great South Bay, you know, in New York, where the Blue Point oyster originated, you know, they were hit pretty bad with the disease. And it was my family's oysters that we lent to them that actually repopulated the entire Great South Bay. So the Blue Point oyster was sort of on the verge of being totally wiped out, and then we sort of came in and donated, you know, over 100,000 oysters and, you know, planted them in the Great South Bay, and they've since regenerated, and now we have an abundant and prolific, you know, existence of oysters there. You know, another thing that we're doing is we're trying to recycle the byproducts that are used in oyster farming. So we're kicking off a sea mesh recycling program where all the restaurants save the oyster bags that we deliver the oysters in, and once a week we collect them and reuse them instead of throwing them in the mesh. You know, they then end up sort of floating around in the river, you know, marine life can get caught in them, et cetera. So we're trying to prevent that and giving them credits towards, you know, new products after a certain amount of collections. So
you've currently got a new pet project. It's a collaborative effort with the Fulton Street Fish Market, which, for those of you who don't know, originally was on Fulton Street in downtown Manhattan, but in the past few years has shifted over to the Bronx, to their current location. And this project that you're working on, you are setting to create an online sort of e-commerce site for the Fulton Street Fish Market. Can you tell people about this project?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, as we were having to go to the Fulton Fish Market to source some other types of oysters, you know, when different restaurants were asking for them, we realized that this $88 million market building that they have constructed in the Bronx is a little bit behind on technology. Their efficiency and innovation is stuck in the Stone Age. I mean, it might as well be 1958. It's about 35 different independent seafood companies or vendors operating in a 400,000+ square feet building. And, you know, half of them don't even have computers. And the problem is that there isn't really any advertising, marketing, social media, you know, in the oyster business. It's very much a bunch of guys standing around waiting for customers to come to them to do their business. And when the market was on Fulton Street, that worked out just fine because all the chefs at the end of the day, after they left work, would go down to the market in the middle of the night, buy their fish, talk to their local, you know, regular purveyor, and everything worked out fine. But since it's moved to the Bronx, up at Hunts Point, this happens less and less. So they're losing their customer base, and the customer base that they have is the same 200, you know, accounts that they've been fighting over since the beginning of you know, the fish market. So what we're trying to do is create a virtual Fulton fish market. It's going to be fishmarket.com without the vowels. It's fshmkt.com. And Intrafish Media, actually the global leader in seafood news, just did a nice little story on us the other day and talked about, you know, our project. And essentially what we're doing is we are creating an online mall of the fish.
I think we are we're having some technical difficulties, but while we are waiting to reconnect with Jeff on the line to you know, fill you in again, if you couldn't hear that first part, is that he's creating an e-commerce site for the Fulton Street Fish Market and is aiming to bring all of their sales to an online venue. Jeff?
Hello.
Hey, you're back.
How are you?
Okay.
Sorry.
Please continue.
Yeah, so we're creating a an e-commerce mall of seafood. Fishmarket.com, as I mentioned, fshmkt.com, will be just a virtual representation of the Fulton Market. So a user or chef will be able to log in or go to the site and, you know, create a profile and basically shop the exact same fish companies that they're currently purchasing from, except online. They'll also be able to do it from their iPhone, their BlackBerry, or any sort of mobile device that they would want to use, the iPad or Android, what have you. The advantage here is essentially showing them the entire market in one place, in one moment. So as a chef, every night, you know, if I'm trying to buy salmon, for example, I might call 3 to 4 different purveyors to try to get a good price on that product, or maybe I'll call 8 of them. What fishmarket.com is going to do is it's going to aggregate all that data in one place. So when they want to buy salmon, they'll go on the site, click salmon, and every single company that's selling the item of the particular type of salmon that they want will come up with their individual pricing so they can shop by product, you know, in a sense. If they want to stay loyal to the company they've been buying from for, you know, however many years, they can do that too. They can click an individual seafood company's store. So if Alaskan Feast Seafood is my favorite company, I've been buying from them forever, and I just want to shop Alaskan Feast products, I'll go to the homepage, I'll click shop by company, and click Alaskan Feast, all of a sudden I'm in Alaskan Feast store, and I can just purchase their products. The third way to shop on the site, which is really, really innovative, and I believe going to change the entire seafood industry as a whole, is this sort of reverse auction functionality that we're creating. So if I have a particular order that I want to place, maybe it's 5 items, I can enter those 5 items in on the site and submit that order. What will happen then is the order will be broadcasted to each individual vendor within the market saying that this chef wants to buy this list of items for delivery tomorrow, for example. And then they can submit bids on that order, which will then be sent back to the chef. So he can get all different types of pricing, and it will be a blind submission as well, so they won't be able to see what other companies are bidding. So the chef will get different quotes, and then he'll be able to award the sale to the vendor of his choice. So it's really going to allow people to get a better price on their seafood. We're also going to be targeting areas outside of New York, because the rest of the United States just doesn't get fresh seafood, let alone sustainable products or traceable fish or, you know, particular types that, you know, may be rare or, you know, hard to find. So we have this database of restaurants and chefs and hotels, casinos, country clubs, catering companies all over the United States, and we're just going to sort of call them up, you know, to put it simply, and say, check fishmarket.com. It's the best way to buy seafood.
Right.
So,
So Fulton Fish Market is one of the most historically significant fish markets in the U.S. It's been owned and operated since 1822. And part of the lore for this wholesale market before its relocation were the sights and sounds and smells of the fish market. You know, people would walk in and be able to see what they're buying. This recent proposal is a huge technological and cultural shift for seafood, and this is happening across the board with the emergence of other places like Guilt Taste. It's really revolutionizing the way that people shop for food. How do you see this cultural shift? How do you think, you know, this is going to affect chefs and the way that they choose their seafood?
Well, when you think about, for example, Guilt Taste, you're comfortable shopping on the site because of their reputation that Guilt Group and Guilt Taste have as a company. They've developed a brand that is amazing, that people trust for quality and for service. So we're trying to sort of replicate that functionality and that type of marketplace online for the fish market, and we're also going to provide tools for the buyer and seller to be able to make the right decision on what to purchase and from who. So there'll be a feedback system with different stars that you can give, like a 5-star rating or a 4-star rating to a particular vendor. So after you purchase a product, you can rate, you know, the seller, you can make comments. It'll be just like eBay. I mean, the people who have negative feedback as sellers on eBay don't do a lot of business. They're immediately sort of flagged as somebody who you don't want to purchase products from because you may get burned. So the second that a seafood company on the site tries to pull any sort of funny business or, God forbid they send, a product that's not exactly what they've been advertising, they're going to get slapped with the negative feedback, and we'll also have the power to remove them from the site. But the bottom line is that they will have a huge incentive to not do this because they will then miss out on the crazy, crazy amount of business that will be done on the site. You know, the amount that this website will increase the scope of their sales is going to be unbelievable, and they're not going to want to put that in jeopardy to make a couple extra dollars here or there, cutting corners, you know, sending a particular fish that, you know, weighs 2 pounds less than, you know, what the order was. And I also think that, you know, as far as touching the fish and being like the old market is concerned, we'll still have people who they can talk to on the phone. They'll still be able to talk to the owner of the company and ask him what's good, you know, that day if they want to call in. And remember, they're going to be buying from the same people they've been currently buying from. So it's not like we're creating, you know, 50 different new fish companies that nobody's ever heard of. If I'm shopping from Blue Ribbon Fish Company, you know, at the moment, or if I'm buying from Gotham Seafood and I'm talking to Joe over at Gotham every single day and he's been supplying my fish, you know, or to my cruise line for the past 15 years, I can still buy from Joe at Gotham Seafood. It's just I'm going to be purchasing that online and probably getting a better price because a lot of them offer a discount. And, you know, it's going to be very transparent. You know, the idea is to aggregate buyers in one place, cause transparency in the marketplace, and create price discovery within the market. So, you know, everybody's really going to know the true value of the fish because, you know, like I had mentioned to you the other day, in passing, is that the problem with seafood is that nobody really knows the true price on the item. So if a company wants to, they can sort of, you know, rip people off here and there, and, you know, this happens a lot. So we're trying to get rid of that.
Jeff, we're going to have to wrap things up, but before we go, when is the planned launch of this new fish market website?
So fishmarket.com, fshmkt.com, should be launching in about a month and a half. There's a landing page up right now where you can submit your email if you want more information. And, you know, our oyster blog for the sustainability thing is going to be sustainableoysters.com. That'll be up in a week. And if you want to check out the New York Oyster Company, of course, you can go to newyorkoystercompany.com or shuckmylife.com.
Nice. That is a good domain name. Well, thanks again to Jeff Northrup for joining me on today's show. And, you know, I think September and the R months are upon us, which means oyster season is in full effect in a few weeks. So, Jeff, thanks again. Thanks to our listeners. And I'm your host, Helen Holliman of You Look Hungry. Thanks to Jack Inslee, the folks at Heritage Radio Network, and Roberta's. Tune in next week. I'll be back. Take care.
Get some meat, turkey and jam, macaroni and ham. Say, do you like steak? I can surely make. If you hear me now, sing it loud for me, crowd.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. There's a lot of posturing and talking around raw milk these days and how great it is. But if you really want to get a full-on investigation into the pros and cons, the risks and benefits of raw milk consumption, here's a nifty website, www.realrawmilkfacts.com. It has a laundry list of FAQs, along with information from studies and reports from American and European science communities. If you flirt with raw milk consumption, this is definitely worth taking a look at. This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.